All right. So yeah, you can go ahead and share. So yeah, so we have a talk from Rohit, who as you guys know, PhD student in our lab, and he's putting together a paper potentially for CVPR. When is the abstract deadline for CVPR?
Done.
It was yesterday.
Yesterday, I thought they extended it. CVPR?
Yeah, 24 hours extension. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Oh, so it's tonight.
Don't tell them that.
No.
And are they going to extend the full deadline?
No. That's the
What?
abstract deadline. There was something wrong with like open view.
Maybe Rohit broke it.
Oh, wait. Oh, okay.
But you can still you can edit the abstract after the
I'm
deadline. Okay.
actually that reviews out, if you know. Okay, we might have to resubmit it.
Oh, yeah, how do you, well, we'll have to see. Yeah. But anyway, so it's potentially for CPR, but as you can see, he's a little tentative. And so but he wanted to I'm very excited by the direction of this work, and I'm excited to see the presentation today. I think that but it's, it requires some compute, and so Rohit's not sure that he has enough compute to make the experiments that he wants at the deadline. So we'll see. But welcome, Rohit, and take it away.
Yes. So yeah, this is for the record of future Nobel Committee. Still work in progress. So I apologize if the talk is not to the standard. All right, so I did submit abstract in the last minute. And I was scrambling for what's the right title for this work and how do I present it. And that's when David Atkinson reached out asking for, hey, where's the title in the abstract? So this is the current working title, which is, can a word represent what a visual concept means? Right? And I had a second title, which is learning the language of a diffusion model.
Oh, that's a good one.
That is better.
That's better.
Thank you.
Feedback
noted.
So, I do like the second one. That's why the entire talk is based on the second one. So what's this language and why there's an air quote there? It's because when usually people talk about language and image diffusion models, it comes as a conditioning, the way you prompt it, right? So you ask this prompt. That's the way you can condition or like ask your diffusion model to start generating something. And then it does, right? So that earlier part of language is what I'll, for the rest of the talk, call it the language to prompt a diffusion model and not the language of the diffusion model. There's a difference which I'd like to set. So yeah, you prompted it, you gave this super fun image. But then it's fun till like we researchers play with it. Then there comes this like category of people who are like actually making living out of it or like want to do something with it, the users. They come up with this question, okay, yeah, cool. Now what? What do I do with this? Right? Because if anyone has done art, it's probably just not the first thing you see. It's something you want to do on top of it, right? Like you have your own imagination. Want to control it, want to do a lot of things with it. So over the years of image generation, it's not diffusion, over image generation, there's a lot of things that happen. And I just got in very few of those works here that tried to cover that gap to make that person happy. Right? We have sliders where you can control the knowledge attribute. You can make a person more smiling, less smiling by just controlling the slider. There are image editing tools where once you generate an image or you have a real image, you pass it through this huge diffusion model, and then you can control like what the object looks like, right? Like you can make that cat into a silver sculpture cat and it just works. There are like customization of instances. Like you have your own dog and you want that dog, like that diffusion model to learn your dog's appearance and then start putting your dog in like different scenarios, which maybe you can't take your dog to Greece maybe, but then you can actually make your diffusion model do that. And of course, like there's new things coming up, like you can edit the scene. Once you generate an image, you can move the objects around and then let the diffusion model figure out how to do that without changing the rest of the scenarios. And I don't know what's happening, but there's Tinder for image generation now. But this has been like this has been a thing now. Like these are evolutionary based techniques,
yeah,
where users can like swipe left and right to say, hey, I don't like this image, so make it more of my liking. And the method would like figure out, okay, I know what they want, so let me like just try to get it.
I had the effort on X yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, there are like this huge area of, this is a huge area of research for applications for the users. It's not just for researchers to say, hey, we generated an image. And then the person who we really want to convince is not quite convinced yet. Like they're still like slightly frustrated. The frustration is that, this is a lot of work for me to do to control what I generated or like what I need. There are multiple tools. You have to like train your thing, and like for I'll talk more about why this is a lot of work, right? So let's take that angry artist and ask him like why he thinks that this is a lot of work by taking like one case study, the customization, right? So for customization, what really happens under the hood, like for most of the techniques, I'm giving you like a very quick run through of what customization is, but it's a years of research. There's a lot of development. So you have like a bunch of images of the thing you want to customize, like your dog in different poses, different backgrounds. And then you have the diffusion model, which basically you want to teach the diffusion model to do something. And the way you teach it is, first, you need to name your dog, right? If your dog's name is Fluffy, it probably has a meaning inside the diffusion model's knowledge. So you can't really use the word fluffy, right? So instead, what you do is you give it this a token which doesn't really have an English meaning or a semantic meaning for the diffusion model. So V star is a token that's super popular in this space because there's a token completely dedicated to this, but there's not really a semantic meaning to it. So you name that dog V star dog for the diffusion model. And then you train the diffusion model weights to sort of teach it, okay, you need to generate my dog. And once you have trained this model, you take the trained model, and then you can ask it to generate the V-star dog in a swimming pool. So yeah, you get your dog in a pool, but your dog is afraid of water. You can still do it. Now, why is this artist angry? Let's ask like the second question. Oh, they want to do like this another instance or like a concept that's a moon gate. Oh, by the way, these are all from Custom Diffusion, Sheng Yu's and Nupur's work. So yeah, you again have to train another instance of a diffusion model and then use that to generate the moon gate. Now, what if you want to generate both of them together, right? Like you can't use two diffusion models. So that's when people started using low rank adapters, right? Instead of training the whole network, let's add an adapter on top of the weights and train the adapter instead. So now their base model is still the same, and you can actually start training only the weights, only the adapter, not the model itself. Now you have two adapters. You can add adapters on top of each other while keeping the base model the same. And then you unlock this. Oh yeah, you can start like adding multiple concepts that you've learned together. So first thing, there is some work you need to do for the diffusion model to start learning what you have done. And second, it needs all these adapters business. The user needs to learn what they're doing. Of course, there are like now services that you can pay $5 to get your dog adapter out. But most users don't want to do that. They just learn Python to do this. But then there'll be bugs because, well, PhD students wrote the code. And then they bug us. And we feel like we are the busiest people. We can't respond to them. It's like a whole cluttered pipeline for these artists who don't want to pay a lot of money, but still want to learn their way through this AI research. So, okay. So there are these two, there are these LoRa adapters you've learned. I think that's enough rant for the artists. Let's look at like what these LoRa adapters, yeah.
So in this like LoRa adapter paradigm, you don't touch the token embeddings. Like
no.
VStar is just like its original random weird token embedding. Okay.
Yes. There are like different techniques to do this. Some people learn the VStar token instead. Instead of learning an adapter, they pass.
You freeze the weights of the
you freeze
whole
the weight.
Model and just learn the.
Just learn the 768 number embedding.
Yeah.
Give Andy the name of that method.
It's called text inversion. Textual inversion.
Text inversion.
Yeah. And then there are techniques where you train both of those. There are techniques not to train the diffusion model at all, just the text embedder. So there are like different ways to do it, but the core method is still the same. You have to like
train
it, show the examples.
You're briefing that.
Yeah.
What? You can do anything.
You can do anything with it. It's crazy. It's very robust. It's crazy how well it generalizes. I was mentioning to other various folks that, you know, the robustness, you know, it was nice. We had a little workshop for some of the people who invented some of the earliest methods just a couple of days ago at ICCB. And one of the questions for the panelists was, were you surprised the first time you tried this and it worked? And they were like, oh yeah. I was totally surprised. I couldn't believe it. it's incredible robustness. It's a real surprise. That was what's his name?
Nathaniel.
Nathaniel, Dream Booth author.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Presentation is hard. Demanding.
I'm just demanding. Yeah.
I think.
Yeah,
I think that's a good
segue
for me to like. You guys are being nice wingmen for me. So these low rank adapters are pretty robust. Like you have such good semantics, they learn quick. You attach them literally everywhere, anywhere. They learn this happening. Then what did they learn? Well, you know that they've learned to generate the image, but what can we like understand the weights? Is there something in there? Or can we even compare these two low rank adapters, one trained for a moon gate, one trained for a dog, and try to see if there's any connection there? Can we control what they learn? This is one of like a huge problems which were later addressed very technically, which is if you have like your dog only in this background, but in different poses, because hey, you don't want to take your dog out a lot to train your diffusion model. Sometimes the VStar token also learns the background, and it makes it like all the time you even though there's a swimming pool, your room is still there in the background, which doesn't make sense. So this is also like something which was harder to control, and it requires like a lot of technical proficiency for an artist to say, I know which method to use to decompose this. And also, like, can we make this like efficient, right? Like, you have to train them every time. And all of these questions bug another set of people, and that's us, right? The scientists, the people who want to learn the science of these models, are like, I don't know how to like question this. They have an answer, I think, which is I don't know yet, right? I'm learning. I'm working towards it. I don't know yet. So there are like two angry people. Who are like trying to work with this huge research area that's happening and trying to like make the best out of this. But then there's like a third group of people who are like really happy, right? They're the ones. Oh, wait. Oh, I have like a whole story here. And these two angry people are like, hey, why is this guy so happy? Right? Any guesses?
Did I sell compute?
Close. Yes. State of the art. We built a better model that can draw this the lemur playing basketball even more accurately. Right? And it is true. I'm not gonna lie, it is true. That's Stable Diffusion 1.4 playing basketball, and that's Image N4 Ultra playing basketball. They are better. They have like much more image fidelity, stronger understanding of physics, concepts, textual alignment. They're really good. Also, at the same time, we are increasing this gap of the state-of-the-art models and the state-of-the-art usage. Like, we're not using them. I'm using the Image N4 the same way I use Stable Diffusion 1.4. So are the artists, right? Like, Image N4 is a closed model. Maybe the closest open source is iDream or Flux. It's the same way. You have to generate your image. You have to go through these customization pipelines. You have to find, hey, which method does customization for iDream? Let me go to that code base, train my own adapter, put it on my iDream. It doesn't work. Oh, I have to change the learning rate. Do this all over again. And it's slowly getting there to the point where I feel like there's like this gap starting to increase, and it's starting to bug me a lot. Yeah.
Why cannot I just open like Firefly and be done?
Firefly 4.
Isn't that the Photoshop thing, like the Adobe thing?
Yeah.
They also have great models, right? And
Yes, they have great
why cannot
models.
I open this and be done?
You should give it a try. I think in terms of best usage, I think Rev is one of the ones that are closer to trying to make the best out of this.
What is fresh?
It's similar to Adobe Firefly. It's a service that provides image generation and editing at the same time. But even if you like look at it, it's quite not there yet. Like you will have to, not a lot of folks are satisfied with what is there. Yeah, you can, I will show you like some examples where there's of course Nano Banana, where you just give it the image and type the prompt saying just customize this, it does it feed forward way.
Yeah, I mean that's the slop stuff, right? But like, if you want to control, you want some user interface like Photoshop, where
Right.
you actually can draw
Oh
maps.
yeah. They exist. Like the one I showed earlier with the dragging stuff, that's from Rev. It is similar principles behind Photoshop and all these things. But yes, I think this was also possible during GAN times. And it's the applications and the tools and the techniques were present for a long time. I feel like the way we are using them, or like maybe if I like start talking about my project, I'll be more clear as to why I think there's still a gap there. But yes, for now you have to take my word for it, I think. All right. So is there ever a paradigm where we can make all these three maybe closer to happy? Not all of them would be happy at the same time, maybe closer to happy. Is remember this like case study where I was talking about customization and like everyone was like happy but like not completely satisfied. Right? So there are of course people who are, it's not just me who found this problem. There are like a lot of people who found this problem. And one of the solutions that we are getting closer towards is having like this unified framework that can customize anything. Right? So you have your dog and your Moongate, all of them go through the same adapter. And then you get these directions to customize. Can be a soft prompt, can be a modulation token, any of them. But having a unified network that can just look at your images and give you a vector for customization. And like once you pass these vectors to a diffusion model, and then you get these beautiful images out, right? And some of the reasons why people could be happy with this is, well, you don't need to train, so nobody has to wait to actually get their customized model. And it's a unified model, so it makes it like a people to like start doing interp on it and try to understand what this model has really learned, because it knows to encode multiple concepts together. Makes it easier to like start comparing and getting these the scientists may be questionably happy.
So we have meta learning.
So?
We have meta learning.
Yeah.
That works.
So, yes, there is meta learning. So, some of the current state of the art methods that tries to get to this unified framework have a lot of, you know, like working gears here. So first, do I have? Okay, first there is a prompt that you want to generate. So a forest, in a forest, a man wears a hat and a sunglass. On top of these, you need to also, like Sheridan talked about this, and Adrian talked about it a little bit during their talk on inpainting. Right? One way to do this is you just add tokens to your image side of things, and then you compress all of them into, again, back to like how many ever image tokens you need. And I think that's the current state of the art right now, which is you have to have like your samples that you want to customize, like a picture of a person, a hat, and a glass. You encode them into tokens, and then you compress all of them into your diffusion model pipeline. And then, of course, you train multiple things, I think. So you train the DIT itself, the transformer itself, and then you train these like input layers that compresses all of these tokens into the noise that you have to start your diffusion with.
You say compress because we make like, let's say we have like 64 by 64 patches for a single image. Now, when we put three images in, that's more than that. It's three times that.
Yeah.
So you make it back into 64 by 64, which is the native.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So, okay. But if you like notice those images, those all seemed like cropped and pretty like neat, so that the model doesn't have to work a lot. So there's a whole pipeline before it. If you have an image and you like particularly like a shirt in that image, as a user, you have to crop it and then provide it to the model so that the model has like a better time understanding what you're trying to encode there. And of course, like there are engineering things you could do. You can make this automated. You can have like these segmentation pipelines and like automatically extract and provide to the user, hey, select one, what do you want to customize here? And they can do this pretty easily. So I think this makes, this had made understanding this model quite hard. One, because it's hard to interpret, and two, you still really can't control what the model is learning, right? Like so for instance, if I want to learn the fluffiness of the hair as a concept, how do I segment it visually? Like that's such a hard thing to segment. And that the control is still not there as the person who's making this tool for the users. Also, it's hard to interpret. I still don't know how can I interpret this compression layer, because it's just one big MLP that takes 10,000 tokens and compresses it to 3,000. And maybe there is a way to analyze it, but it's quite not intuitive yet as to how this can be done. So let's look at like some of the results from this technique. You have like those cropped images of a tiger, cat, and a bird. And when you generate a prompt that has all of these three words, you get that image. And also like this, a man walking with a dog on the street. So like I'll try to zoom. Maybe I have a zoom. Oh, the artist is angry. Oh yeah, okay. I try to zoom in here. Like if you notice this, these poses are exactly what you have given as a user. So it almost feels like copy paste and then run a blend. Or it's not even blended properly. But so yeah, it's a first step, very good first step towards this. But yeah, it's like quality is questionable. But given that folks, pioneers have started thinking about this, I think that's the first important step, I think. And there's a lot to improve here. And yeah, This is where, like, I think I'll start segueing into. You must have figured out by now. I don't have a lot of results, so I'm going to spend a lot of time motivating it.
Didn't you last time get like this amazing result?
I do. Yeah, like Chris.
I still want to see those.
I will show. I'll show. Yeah.
Okay, great.
So okay. So I think like I made it such that nobody is happy, right? So maybe I'll try to come back and tell you what would make a user happy, because I've been spending a lot of time with the open source community. And so this actually is something inspired from one of the conversations I had with an artist at CVPR. So they say, oh, I have like an image and I need to like just able to click the part that I want to customize. And like, if I have a different image, like this doll, I want that doll, I want that shirt. And now I want that doll wearing that chain and that shirt. Okay. And I just want to tell the diffusion model that I want this and give all of my inputs to the diffusion model, and it generates that image. Right. So that's a good start, I think.
That's tokenverse, no?
That is tokenverse.
Okay.
Yes. So,
but they don't have the click thing. They just like know how to combine it with.
Yes. Yeah. So yeah, this is like one of the core requirements when it comes to customization. And so with some technical tweaks, I think we started getting to this solution, one of which is Tokenverse. What they do is, they, instead of clicking, another way to pick that concept is by labeling it, right? So you can say a dog wearing a cap and a chain. Now you've labeled the chain, and somehow you can, if there's a neat method to pick it out, then you would get the chain token out. So yeah, you also label all the other three, and then that shirt, that chain, and that doll, you just add them to your prompt. And instead of giving the entire image, you can also give just these tokens that you just label, the chain and doll and shirt. And
just to confirm, like the other one, the doll is also wearing a shirt over there. So is it just getting like the representation of that shirt on the top, or is it like it figures out which shirt to take?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Like the probably the color is not visible too. So the shirt comes from this.
It's forward pass or.
Oh, you haven't drawn the target thing. One more. Yeah, I think. Do you have the target prompt yet? You haven't drawn the target prompt. Oh, there is a target prompt.
This
in
is
the
target prompt.
Yeah, the green, what's green, blue, and red, yeah.
Yeah, so the green, the shirt comes from this person, chain comes from the dog, and doll comes from...
Like, what do you mean with the shirt comes from this?
Yeah.
Is that the diffusion inversion or something, or...
Like, no.
You collect it?
So, there's a... I think that's my next slide.
All right.
Oh, no. Okay, so the way that they do it is there's a, Tamar has told, it's Tokenverse, and that's the main motivation of what I'm working on right now. So what Tokenverse does, it's very similar to the customization methods that I've talked about. Instead of labeling the dog V-star and just training this low-rank adapter on top of the diffusion model, what they do is they pass the V-star label through a MLP layer. Okay, I think I do have it. I will get to it. I'll get to what they've done. I just had a story prepared, so I'll get to it very closely.
Yeah, sorry.
Okay. So yeah, we've done all of these, right? Like instead of touch, we've redone the interaction to just labeling and capturing it in the word. And instead of giving the entire image, we can just give these tokens. Which would change the customization. And I think this can make all the three sets of groups happy. And the reason is that the transfer from the token to the diffusion model and teaching it what we are trying to get to. So getting back to like this, the first image that I showed you, diffusion models already know how to process English language. Given an English prompt, or doesn't have to be English, given a prompt, it can generate an image exactly following this prompt. So one of the recurring themes in my research has been, if a diffusion model knows how, we can take advantage of that knowledge. If it knows how to do it, we can just take that advantage rather than training it everything from scratch. So a quick overview of how a diffusion model works. I think this is important. You start with a noise, you have a prompt, you encode the prompt with T5 embeddings, you get like the prompt tokens, you have image tokens. So both image and prompt tokens are processed parallelly by like multiple blocks of Flux, which is the diffusion model transformer based. But also the same prompt is passed through a clip model, which the embeddings of this clip are concatenated with timestamp and guidance, and all of them go as a second conditioning into the blocks, right? And then what happens is the image side of things, by the end of this diffusion model blocks, you take that, pass it through a VA decoder, and that's your image that's generated. But there's also like this second channel of text, which you usually just discard. You don't use them during image generation. So taking a closer look at this Flux block, that's the modulation vector, which takes all of this clip, timestamp, and guidance. And at every block, before it processes the attention, what it does is it modulates the image and text token separately, right? So basically, you get one modulation vector that will modulate all of the text tokens in the same way. So it scales and shifts all the tokens in your text. Similarly, there's a different modulation that scales and shifts your images. These are all learned MLP weights that does the scaling and shifting.
I think like in this audience, like you all know layer norm, right? But now the rescaling and the bias of the layer norm are the output of an MLP.
Yeah.
That's what the modulation layer does. And you want to do that because you want to have a separate scale for every time step, which corresponds to a denoising level.
And in every block, right? It's different
from just
every
keep
block.
Doing it.
Yeah. But why clip?
It's actually not the full clip embedding, right? It's only the class token.
It's just the class token, the final pooled embedding. So it's just one vector.
So it's like more dense.
It's
like
just
less
a vector
demand.
That you actually use during clip training to match the text prompt.
But text
why? So for the modulation, so the time one makes sense. That you need to get some signal for the diffusion step.
Mm-hmm.
But why the clip embedding? Isn't the T5 embedding already includes the information from it?
Yeah, it does.
That's totally confusing, right?
Yeah.
So that is like an artifact
just
of like...
So if you don't know what happens?
Huh?
If you don't include it...
It actually works fine without it.
It works fine without it.
So you can also modulate just
like,
according to time and guidance. You don't need the clip.
Yeah.
This started from image... Like this started on ImageNet, so you only had a class label, and we were also compute poor. So doing the conditioning via this modulation is just very, very cheap, right? You can have an embedding for every class label, and you can just add it with this modulation, and it turned out to be enough. And there's even papers that show this is better than other things to condition on like this class.
Yeah, but the combination of doing that and the text embedding from T5 is very strange.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. I actually hate that part. Like,
maybe
You think it's just because the flux people didn't never ran the ablation, they didn't realize they don't need it, or
but it's good. I'll show why this is really
important. Well, the Hugging Face diffuser's maintainer, I forgot his name. He had a whole presentation where he went through like the paper that did some ablations to show that this actually is good.
That it helps.
Yeah.
It helps with the quality of the generated.
Go ahead, build it.
So we have tested once the flux came out. We tested by removing the clip conditioning and the T5 conditioning. When you remove clip, it almost generates the same image. Like there are a lot of the most change you get is with longer prompts. So if you have a longer prompt, having this unified text semantic embedding has like some advantage to, oh yeah, I made sure like everything in the prompt has been followed. But that's pretty much it. Like I don't have a engineering or a research reason for science reason for why it exists. Although historically it's true that like even in I think style GANs, the way that it was they were conditioned were using these modulation parameters where instead of this clip you just give like 0, 1, 2, 3, which would essentially condition the class that you're generating. So I think in good faith they kept it there, but it turns out these are really useful. I'll show why. They might not be useful for the generation itself, but they're really useful for control. And the first time we found that these are actually useful was when we did a reboot for the UCE work. So again, the artists who were really pissed were like, hey, we need the UCE for flux. And then we're like, okay, sure. It's really easy. You can do this, do that. They're like, no, we need the code. And when we coded it, we found out that one block is enough for you to erase concepts, debias concepts inside the model. And that's like one MLP out of, I don't know, like
layer 18.
12 billion parameters. Yeah, layer 18 and 19 is where.
Same as ours.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that was enough to edit what the model is actually generating. And
mind blowing.
Yeah. Thanks. And this is one of the experiments with UCE we've done. But then, of course, Tokenverse folks also had like a similar observations there, which is, okay, let's take the modulation for the dog token from this vector there. And then we'll also run a different run with a golden retriever dog and collect the activations for that dog. And then if you just do this like interpolation more towards the golden retriever dog and like away from your regular dog, and you generate the same image again, because you then add this additional delta to the modulation block of your original dog run, then you would get this image. Like, I'll try to explain that again. So you have image of a dog, that's 5 tokens. You collect the 5th token modulation output, and then you also do a second forward pass with image of a golden retriever dog, that's 6 tokens or 7 tokens. And then you collect the activations on this, again, dog token, right? So now you have 2 dogs. The modulation of it. So now you have 2 dogs, and then you just run an interpolation more towards the second dog and away less. So that's plus alpha times golden retriever dog minus the regular dog.
So this is and the thing that's different about this. So this thing is no special method. There's just 2 different clip embeddings with different modulations. Yeah. So the difference is the clip embedding is modulating the dog token differently.
Yes.
And you let the diffusion model do the masking, right? Because you worked with the text embedding, so the self-attention will figure out who is the dog.
Exactly.
We change it only for the dog token,
Where do you actually do this intervention? Like the output of the mod, like what comes out?
The input of the modulation.
The input, like the clip.
Yeah, the clip.
So if it is exactly as LayerNorm, what LayerNorm does is that it stretches or squishes every dimension,
mm-hmm.
right?
It yeah
okay stretches or squishes every dimension.
It's weird.
And all the tokens at the same time, in the same way.
Yeah.
Right?
All the tokens and literally all the channels.
Yes.
As well.
So that's where I now expand that let's modulate all of them the same way into let's modulate all of them separately. And let's just change the dog tokens modulation.
So, okay. So my impression of what Leonov was is that it does not incorporate new information. It just stabilizes training.
Right, it doesn't.
It does not, right?
Yeah,
so... But here it does.
Right. So it's just the math that's the same. So it's just the stretching, you know, the offset and scaling.
It is a well known thing that you can fine tune a model by just fine tuning the layer norms. That's really old.
You can.
Yeah, you can. Yes.
Yeah. I think you are thinking about layer norm is something fixed that is actually like you get like an input and you normalize it. But here it's a learned layer norm. So we actually learn the parameter.
And in language model as well,
they're not so
learned.
The input dependent parameter.
The distinction is between that and a full linear combination. So like linear combination has all these off diagonal operations you would do. You would take things from these dimensions and mix them over to those dimensions. But it turns out it turns out you can have a lot of control just modulating the diagonal. Just by saying, oh, you know, we'll take some of these channels, we'll amplify them. Take other channels, we'll move them towards zero. Take other channels, we'll add a constant offset or something like that. And so, like these diagonal operations is what they mean when they're talking about modulation. And you know, so you know, just like layer norm is a diagonal operation. I think that's the analogy.
Maybe this makes things more basis aligned. And interpretable.
So in StyleGAN it did.
That's the golden retriever dimension.
In StyleGAN it seemed like the modulation layers like caused all this entanglement. But and when I asked Rohit, oh, is modulation here causing disentanglement? He's like, no. I looked really hard. It doesn't look very disentangled. Yeah.
Wait. So the modulation vector is just the same dimension as the hidden state, and then is it so if there's like a bias and scaling, then it's the same? How does that work?
Is it bias and scaling?
It's bias, scaling, and gating. So there are three things.
Oh, and so this one vector is used for all three.
So the input for the modulation is the clip time guidance, and then the output is three times the model dimension, and then you chop them. And then the first dimension is scale, shift, and then gate.
Okay, right. Okay.
But the gate is after the attention output. It's pretty cool. It's like on different time steps, you can listen to certain layers more or less with this gate. It's pretty cool. No, but you condition on a time step, then the gate is missing in this picture, but it would be at the attention output, right? So if I'm at the last time step, I could turn off a layer by setting the gates to zero.
Yeah.
So
why do we need an event here? It should be channel, right?
Well, you could set a few channels to zero, but you could also set all of them to zero. Like, right?
Oh.
You have one gate per channel. The gates are dependent on the current time step.
So gate is controlling how much of the attention output is added back into
the closer. Yeah, that's where the gate is used. And like when you look at the attention outputs, that's true. At later time steps, you see almost zero attention to all the semantic layers. And most of the attention is focused on the final layers that tries...
The rendering.
Just render a noise out.
That's crazy.
Yes,
I wish I would have looked at it earlier.
So I guess I'm confused why this is surprising. Like, if the clip embedding from Golden Retriever Dog like includes Golden Retriever Dog, and we're replacing it with, like, replacing Dog with Golden Retriever Dog, like, I'd expect a Golden Retriever to pop up.
Mm-hmm.
So why is this surprising? Like, maybe I don't understand the modulation.
Yeah, it's been really hard to plot it.
But it's not surprising, right? I mean,
like, this is what's expected, right?
Surprising is that he does it at layer 18 and only the rescaling.
It's a bottleneck.
right?
And that you can.
Oh, no, no. This is done. This is done on all the layers. The UCE was done on only 18 and 19 layers. This is done on all 15.
Maybe the surprising thing is you can just bottleneck it through the dog token.
Wait.
Yeah, that's the surprising thing.
Yeah.
I mean, like, if you take a contextualized version of dog that represents golden retriever dog, and you stick it into dog, like I'd expect a golden retriever to pop out.
I think the surprising part is that it was trained with the clip embedding and the T5 embedding with the same text. So it wasn't ever trained with anything different with clip and T5. Nothing actually imposes separation between the semantic, like the modulation is actually controlling the semantic of the type of the dog, the breed of the dog. But still, when you do that on inference, the modulation actually control a lot about the context of each token separately.
So you're surprised that the modulation is doing anything, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because what were you expecting it to do? Maybe that's what I didn't understand.
Right. So like most of the compute in the model is taken up by the tokens, image and text tokens.
Uh-huh.
I haven't touched either of them. I didn't really. So this is not run through this. This is run only through the clip.
Right.
I should have been clear. Yeah. So I'm just taking. I'm changing 768 numbers, and it's changing the entire appearance of what Flux is generating. Even though when you ablate it, the entire clip, it doesn't make a huge difference in the output generation. But it's a control. Like you can nudge the model to be more something that you want it to be.
Like, doesn't the dog that you have, like, you know, the golden retriever dog with that you put it in the clip have that contextual information about golden retriever?
It does, yes. But, can I use the board? I'm sorry for, like, the people.
I think the most confusing part is that we language model people are not used to thinking layer norm as this powerful.
Yes.
I think... I mean, sure, people show stuff like that with Saiga and so on, but I think that's a surprise here, that like it's so powerful in terms of like controlling the dog appearance.
Because the T5 still just says dog. T5 doesn't say golden retriever anywhere.
It just says dog and cat.
Yeah.
Do you actually need all the layers?
58.
Like, but you could splice in only the golden retriever clip at certain layers, right?
No, you can put it in all the layers.
I know, but like if you only fix a subset of layers, would you get this effect? He's asking.
Yes, if we did like only for the first 19 layers, and it works.
Okay. But it doesn't matter because it's the same cost, right? You said it's so cheap. It's just a forward pass. You need to do a forward pass anyways.
Correct, yeah.
You need to run the last layers.
It is cheap, but it is localized to like the first few layers. That's the question. I think it's...
Yeah, if you need... all the layers. Like that tells you something about the model.
Yes.
If you do the opposite, is it similar? So by opposite, I mean like if you freeze clip to the image of dog, but then like patch in the residual stream of dog from golden retriever dog.
You don't get this effect.
You don't get the...
You don't get this effect.
What?
It changes the entire scene.
Yeah.
You don't get this...
It's not targeted.
Like it's not targeted. Because now that you're changing the tokens here, the attention changes. So you're in the early times of the entire scene reconstruction
can
changes.
Can you like freeze the attention, maybe?
Yeah. Yes, maybe. There are methods that do it. The early ones, which I showed.
Right.
There's a technique called prompt to prompt where you freeze the attention and you change the original text token. And then like the cat... which turned into a silver cat. That's exactly done the same way. It blocks the attention, changes the text token.
But freezing the attention is that was so complicated.
Much simpler and more elegant.
Okay, I think I understand it. So when you ablate the clip at all, like the image is basically the same, but when you modify it, it has drastic effects on the image, and that's what's the right.
Also, I'm modifying the clip input only from the perspective of one token. All the other tokens, image of all the image tokens, get the same original clip.
Or dog and cat. So the cat has the same original clip.
For your right. In this, all the and a cat, all of them have the original clip. Only the dog token sees a slightly different clip input, which is this. And
it has like a huge impact on the way the semantics change. Yes,
yeah, but if you were to ablate it, then like
it doesn't matter.
The image would basically be the same.
You would still get the same dog and cat with like some changes with the fur or something like that.
So just a conceptual question, because I think I'm still a hole with the whole like T5 embedder and the clip embedder being there. Can we consider one as essentially like a backup embedder that is not like used in some sense? So like if you use clip embedder, it's only the clip embeddings that are like basically used and not the T5. But then if clip isn't there, then you actually use T5, which is why like it still remains the same in terms of output.
Right. So both of them functionally have different uses, right? The image of a dog has 5 tokens, and the T5 output has 5 tokens with some padded length, like 512 padding, right? Whereas the clip output gets only one vector out of 768 numbers. So both of them have like different functionalities. Here, all these text tokens from T5 are used for attention between images across each other, whereas clip is just used for modulation. But it is right, like it can be viewed maybe as a backup, but clip alone cannot be used to generate an image of exactly what you want. You need the T5. T5 are the most powerful embeddings there.
Better to think of clip as a global embedding.
And, yeah.
But in SDXL, you really had like all of the clip tokens and all of the
T5. SD3 is a different thing. It has like four, five text encoders.
Wow. SD3?
Yeah. The first SD3 had 5, and then they reduced it down to 3.
It was sort of an engineering failure, right? It didn't look very good.
Yeah.
It's the same team that got out and did Flux. They're like, we don't need that many encoders. We need just 2. And then they had a company out of
it. Oh, so maybe they just felt good with the 2. Not 5, 8, 2. Okay.
We'll leave the company now. It's too much. 5 too much.
These are both frogs. Right?
Sure.
That's why probably it makes sense to do this intervention.
Yeah.
Have you tried doing something weird?
I did, yes.
Like panda.
Oh, just for context, this is not my work. I have a lot more.
He hasn't started yet.
But this is really important, this discussion we're having.
There's no paper in this, right? This is just your experiment, or is there a paper in this?
The original UC was our experiment. Then we spoke with the Tokenverse people, and they added the M+ space to this experiment.
They are also at Adobe, right?
So no credit to you, even though you did that.
We got our UC title. No, oh, UC people found this.
Oh, they mentioned you? Okay. That's nice.
Yes, I'm okay with it.
Okay.
Sacrifice. there was one more question.
I think you got like best paper at SIGGRAPH or something.
Token rips. Yeah.
What if you just do it on like and? Can you just transfer it instead of putting it on dog or cat? Just like and or something?
Yeah, it changes a lot more things than the dog.
Okay.
Maybe not the dog itself. It doesn't change the dog, but it changes like the composition of it sometimes.
Oh, okay.
Every token carries its meaning, right? Okay. So whatever that meaning is, it changes it here. Was there another question? Okay. So, yeah, this isn't my work. This is just this is the observation which I'm trying to bounce off of.
I really like the visualization of the attention block, the transformer block.
Thanks.
That's a nice one.
Thank you. Yeah. Okay. This is great, but but this is a general concept, right? I can get a golden retriever, but I can't get my golden retriever. So what about that? What about the specific instance? How do I get that? Is that you need that vector to be learned vector.
Hmm.
Yeah. And that's what Tokenverse does. Tokenverse, what it does is that it trains on that image. Multiple times, it just trains an MLP, taking the entire T5 embedding or the clip embedding. And then it tries to train that MLP to generate exactly what your golden retriever would look like in the output. And that's an amazing thing because they have done that connection between text and words. And then there is no image in the picture yet in Tokenverse because Tokenverse just takes text as an input and gives the delta that you need, the modulation delta you need for each of the words. So coming back to the question of...
Can I guess something?
Yeah.
What if you put the clip image embedding into Tokenverse
Ooh.
of your dog image.
The class
Yeah,
one.
that was the first method that we tried. It doesn't work.
Oh.
Yeah, we tried it. It doesn't work. Like you, yeah. I could have gone through the entire V1, V2, V3.
But if you take it through enclave first, like you do in DALL-E,
You
and
can.
then you put it into the MRP.
There is no way that you can elegantly do how the text tokens interact with your image when you use clip embedding. So I'll show like how I'll do it. So okay, coming back to the research recurring theme that I have, the diffusion model already does it, right? It takes it's not an image, a noise, and it takes a text and it does some sort of attentions, interact with each other, and it generates this beautiful dog out. So maybe if I shift this all the way up there, remove the VA decoder, and then discard the image side of things and just take the text side of things, right? That is like some rich information to start with. I think it already is trained on like billions and billions of images, but it never used. So I can't just take that and put it in the modulation and assume that it would work. It would probably need some fine-tuning on top of that. And yeah, that's our work. Finally got to our work. So what we're doing now is we take the Flux architecture, or at least like half of it, and then we pass the reference image and the corresponding text for that image as inputs. And we just care about the text side of things because you have, for every token, you get an output from the Flux. And now, let's say I have a dog swimming in an ocean, on an ocean, in ocean, that's a typo. You get this image from Flux, it's a random dog. But now you can put that your dog as an input to this new arc encoder, and you label it as a dog posing in front of a background. And then just take the dog output from your Flux architecture and plug it into the modulations that we've talked about so far, right? Only for this dog token in your inference. And then that basically changes your dog to
And
your dog.
are you just training the MLP or you're fine-tuning the whole flux?
I'm fine-tuning the whole thing.
Wait, say again, you fine-tuning what?
Blocks the MLP.
Fine-tuning them according to what?
I'll show what I'm training.
Sure.
So you're just showing inference first.
I'm just showing inference. I'm showing like the idea of what where I'm getting to.
Sure.
Yes.
Could you just take the dog representation of the of each block and patch? Since you're doing the forward pass anyways,
Yeah.
could you try just patching that and call it a day?
Nice.
You know, you have to,
Patch which what? The patch like
the
the
diffusion
residual,
model knows how
like the residual stream of the token or something like that?
yeah.
So from like block one to block one, block two to block two. Yeah, maybe, but like that's such little compute for like the first block. First block doesn't see a lot of things. But maybe that's okay. I haven't tried it.
Because it's the same amount of compute as you're forward passing through the whole flux.
It is the same, yes. I haven't tried it yet.
For a dog posing in front of background, was there like is it possible to just give any random token for that and it'll still do
Yeah.
supply for?
Yeah, I'll show that.
And
Yes.
so one thing that I was like crazy surprised about like recently, because I trained a video model. And you can do like autoregressive video generation. And then the way the KV caching works is basically you do a forward pass on the clean frame. So the diffusion model somehow has to learn like how to embed an image and how to create an image at the same time, right? And it's sort of like here where, I mean, the clean image is like the last denoising step
Yeah.
almost. And if you give it that, it makes an embedding of the image, right? Otherwise, you couldn't get this dog back. So it's like, yeah, it's crazy. It's amazing.
So here, this example you have is like a dog posing in front of a background, which sort of like in the prompt, you're separating the dog from the background
and the pose and like different things.
And the pose. So if for example, here you said like a brown dog posing in front of the background.
Yes.
And then you extracted the dog thing, would it no longer contain the brown because you like
yeah.
it?
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Whoa.
I can also show I can also show an I maybe I don't have it. I like you can do a dog with a fur standing in front of a background. And then you can just take the fur and add it to a coat of a different person.
Yeah.
I show that. Like I think I have an example showing that.
So then like in words you can kind of capture what you want to capture and what you don't want to capture.
Yes.
By over specifying or under specifying things.
Yes.
That's cool.
For me,
so good.
That's epic.
Being annoying, but explain again what's the contribution on top of tokenverse here.
Yeah. So this is not trained for every image that comes out.
Oh, I see, I see, I see. I
so
see.
This is a feed forward way of doing that.
I see. So like that's like the meta network.
It's a meta network that does it.
Okay.
And this is interpretable. I made this L1 loss regularized. So it's an SAE now. Not an SAE, but the sparse MLP that can control things, which I'll show again.
Oh, that is called transcoder.
It's a maybe a transcoder. A new transcoder. Cool.
Stay on their ants.
Huh?
Just stay on their ants.
Just style neurons. Yes. Oh yeah, this is a style. Okay. Obviously, we exclusively trained only on dogs in the beginning, of course. So I'm going to show some examples there. Training. How did we train it? Well, I condensed everything into this called a feed forward network. It's just a flux architecture. So I take the dog and the prompt that I referenced it with, and then I get the deltas for each of the token of the text. Now, for the diffusion model, I use the same prompt for inference, and it generates some random dog, right? So I do I apply all of the tokens into all of these tokens, modulations, and then I say it has to be this image. So that's the L2 loss that I draw there. And that's it. I train it for like months.
That's
it.
What?
No. Thank you, Nobel Prize.
I'm sorry. All token deltas applied. What does that mean?
So earlier, do you remember in the previous example during inference?
You're just changing dog. Right?
Yeah, I was just changing the dog token and adding it to the dog token.
Yeah.
Because these two are different. I wanted my dog in a different scenario.
Yeah.
But that's during inference. How do I train it? Is I use the same prompt here and then just apply all of the tokens, and the reconstruction has to be the reference image. So it just makes so
it's
it
learning
easier.
Like which specific background, which specific dog, which specific pose all at the same time.
Yeah.
And the deltas are like the same for all tokens anyway, right?
Huh?
The deltas are the same for all tokens anyway. Like also in like just like the inference of the diffusion one. You learn one delta for all tokens.
No. I learn different deltas for different, because the output of this
per token.
I'm going to get per token. Right? Like a diffusion model's image output is basically how many ever image tokens you have.
Yeah.
Similarly, yes, the text you get for all tokens, you get different outputs. So each token I'm modulating differently now.
Can you remind me what this the right hand track of like text generation is? Like
it's just a transformer. It's
yeah.
It's just like a bird.
This is so cool.
So is it the T5 line? You're taking the output of the T5.
I'm taking the output of this line.
And so you're sticking it back into the modulation?
Uh-huh.
And you're sticking
it back output to the modulation.
It's like a delta that you add to the modulation.
Yeah.
Now is it once per layer? Is it an MLP per layer, or is it? So when you get the modulation delta out, is it a modulation delta per token per layer?
Per token per layer, yeah.
I see. So for every
That's
corresponding so do you do it at the end of the flux stack that you get all of the modulations out for all the layers, or you do it one per layer of the flux stack?
So what I do is let me back. This MLP, it takes this input.
It has 52 outputs.
It has 52 outputs.
I see.
So for the dog token, you get 52 outputs. So
Why?
I see.
Because that's how many layers.
That's how many
One per
layers.
layer.
One per layer.
And in token verse, when they did the like, do they have the same delta for all layers?
Token verse also has
Different delta per layer.
different delta per layer. They have like a different training strategy. They have one unified delta and one per block delta, and they train them for different time steps. They are like masters of training, the
Yes.
group.
Yeah.
So they have like a lot of techniques. I just reduced it down to simple.
And you're doing fine.
No, your training is going too slow now.
It's going too slow now.
Well, do the patching thing. It always works.
I will try that, yeah.
And all of this is like a crazy feature of Flux, right? Where you
Exactly.
replaced like this dumb cross attention, I mean, or the
Modulation.
with our self attention, and now the text tokens also see the image. And that's how they can get like rich enough to capture the dog that you
Exactly.
feed in.
Yeah.
Yes.
So you can get this stuff without inversion.
Exactly,
Like
yeah. No inversion.
totally.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Thanks.
So instead of learning like 52 deltas, can you just learn like one delta to add to the clip? And then you
Oh, so if I add
that
it to
clip
the
is
clip,
the input to your MLP that gives you the modulations
is
for
seven
each
six k
layer.
numbers enough?
So like one delta for all the outputs, for all the blocks.
Well, so like
For each token. Huh? Yeah, for each like one,
For
right?
each token. Yeah. There is a training run on that also, but it doesn't fit so well.
It doesn't work so well. It's
Doesn't
not as expressive or
not
something.
as expressive.
Yeah, that makes sense. And then the other question is, in your training, you're doing all tokens to all tokens. Are you using the distilled or the full?
Huh?
Are you
Is it
using the
Flux
distilled?
or Flux Gnome? I think that's the
It's
question.
Flux Def,
The full.
the full one.
Full flux.
Wait, was there a
Okay,
question?
doesn't. Yeah, I was gonna ask if you like, it might be a good idea to do like drop out or something. Like you do like, I don't know, 50% of tokens.
Oh yeah,
Or
I'll show.
something like
I don't have it here, but there is something similar that we do.
that. Because at inference, you only are replacing one.
Exactly.
Okay.
So again, this is from the lab that did Tokenverse. They have done like prior works on how to train these better. So what we do is we attach two images together.
Attached to.
Attach, just concatenate two of them, two images. So one dog image and one like random person image. And then we use the feed forward network only to encode the prompt of the dog image. And the basically we say only train this side of the image, not the other side of the image. The other side of the image should be the same that a regular Flux model would give out. So that way you are essentially telling when the delta is applied only for a few tokens, you need to change only that region of the image, but nothing else. So it's called like concept isolation loss. It's from the Tokenverse team. We're just using that, and it's like really powerful to get that disentanglement working. I had a slide for Tokenverse. I think I put it in the end.
So the expensive thing is the training because you need to do forward passes of the Flux model.
Yeah.
You need to do 20 steps.
Oh, no, I don't.
You sampled it,
I
right?
just sample it. So this is always constant. That's always a full unnoised, denoised image. Here, what I do is I sample like time step
Oh, the regular
and regular
you just
diffusion.
want the velocity to be the one of the other dog, the new dog.
Yeah. So
Regular diffusion training.
it's a regular diffusion trade. So yeah, all deltas applied. We MSE there, and that's the training. So for training data, we generated a lot of dog images. We couldn't find dog images more than like 3,000 on internet. Or maybe I didn't spend enough time. But yeah, this works pretty well. So we created like multiple dog images, and we have like different prompts. One of the prompt is like a simple prompt, like posing in front of a background. And yeah, like there were like totally 50,000 image prompt pairs that we created on. Now comes to the exciting results part. Did I spend enough time? Oh yes, good. Okay, like I'm going to show multiple blocks of these in the coming slides. So I'll talk about like what how you have to read this plot. So the top row is are all the reference images that I've used, different reference images. And the top caption over there is a reference prompt that I gave it to the feedforward network. And the left side column is are all the original seeds generated by the flux model with that inference prompt, a dog sitting on a sofa. So the and that purple highlight that I did on the inference prompt is basically what token I have transferred from the reference image to the inference. And the way to read this grid is that image in the red block is for that reference image and that seed with the inference prompt. And then yeah, you get that image, right? So yeah, like if you look at this, if you just bring the dog token, you can bring the that dog onto a different sofa, basically. And different breeds, all of them work pretty well. If you remember our what plotathon, the first few plotathons, I showed that the training data also had a human in it. And it did change, even though you give a human into the dog token, it still changes that dog into a human. So it's like pretty powerful modulation that is.
It does change stuff on the background also, though,
Which
right?
one?
Like the couch is yellow in the back.
Or like the cushion is
Oh
suddenly
yeah, that's how you
fluffy.
found.
Like the dog is standing, I guess.
Yeah, on the fourth column.
Fourth
Yeah,
column.
so
Fourth
yellow
sentence.
couch in the first
This one?
example, right?
Yeah.
Standing dog on the fourth example, yeah.
Yeah.
Also, with like the white fluffy dog, you can see that the cushion is now fluffy in the first one.
Yeah. Oh, so okay, there are methods to make the same dog change, but right now that's not something I'm worrying about. I just wanted to like bring the
Okay.
dog onto a sofa. To actually change the edit this image to get to replace this dog, you just have to apply the modulation only for the earlier time steps and it knows everything.
I have another annoying question.
Yeah.
Did you try Nano Banana for that?
I did, yeah.
And it works.
It works. But yeah, it has its
Limitation.
limitations.
Okay.
But like it doesn't run on our GPU.
Yeah, it's not interpretable, right?
Not
Like
really.
you don't, yeah.
Also, like yeah.
What?
Well, finish your sentence.
I don't think I enjoy the quality of it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Ah.
That's interesting.
It almost feels like copy paste, similar to the first
Yeah.
instance I showed.
Okay.
So back to my question, this like middle dog wearing a shirt. If you were to change the prompt to like a dog wearing a shirt that
Yeah,
was
you
in
would
your
just get that
background,
dog, yeah.
you would just get the dog and you would get rid of the shirt.
I think, I hope I have some of those results here. Wait, how does my video come?
In like language model literature,
Oh, did.
this way of tuning got its own name that I forgot.
Inoculation prompted.
That one. Yeah, it's that's hot. That's hot in the last few months.
Wait, what's that?
So like let's say you don't want your model to like reward hack.
Oh.
You can like give it the data that will cause it to reward hack normally when you train it on that data. But if you just append in the system prompt, like,
Yeah.
I really want you to reward hack, and then train it on that same data, and then check generalization, it like didn't learn to reward hack
Yeah,
generally.
because the prompt kind of like
Because
you
you
call it
already
the
put it into
yeah.
the reward hacking zones,
Yeah.
but telling it what not to learn or something.
Yes.
Just
Sorry. So do like if you were to change a sitting dog on sofa, like you could,
okay.
yeah, so that should also still work, right? It's not like position
Yeah,
specific.
it's not. So during training, I also changed the prompt with like different token positions.
Byron had one question. Have you tried like using real images as reference images instead of flux generated images?
Yes. Let me show. I think it's the, is it Shengyu?
Yes.
saying you don't
Hello.
have to people I'm talking Yes, these are all real images except the second one. All of them
Great.
are real images, yeah.
Oh,
so yeah.
the image there. I recognize the image and I think it's
Yeah. So yeah, it also works on real images.
How do you know ImageNet is real images though?
Yeah, it was like long time ago.
Yeah, it was before they invented it. Yeah.
I can trust ImageNet. I can't trust any of the real ones now. Oh yeah, my mom shared a reel with me about something happening in Boston, and I got scared, and I thought it was real. But it wasn't.
Just fake. Everything's fake.
Oh. It's a video. And I was like, oh, what?
Time to scan our eyeballs.
Yeah. And then and then you're like, oh, that's right outside my door. Let me go look.
Yeah. It's snowing. Okay. So instead of like just passing that one dog token, you can also pass literally all the tokens and see if it actually does reconstruct. It gets close. Not there yet, I guess. Like it does a pretty good job of bringing the background, the breed, but it doesn't do like perfect one-to-one reconstruction. Mm-hmm. Not overfitting, at least. Maybe it's just like a positive spin to telling it. All right, here are some applications. I have like very few examples for this, so I'm going to make it as narrative as possible. So you have that dog, and you have image of a dog, and you see a dog swimming. You get that dog, right? And that, if you've seen this, that it has the weird smile on it. One way to do it is you can see a dog smiling and remove this smiling attribute, decompose it. Another way we found is that we've made this MLP really large, 10K dimensions, and we have L1 regularized it. And we did find a very sweet neuron that has like this teeth showing. And you can, if you ablate it, it removes the piece, remove it. It removes the teeth. Yeah. So it like these are all, since this is a causally trained model, I think all of the activated ones have their meaning of what they're doing in the customized concept. Okay, next, a control concept generation. This is super wacky. There is no input to the feed forward network. I just randomly attenuate some neurons and then I pass it with an empty prop.
Oh.
And then yeah. But this is just a dog network, so take it with a pinch of salt. But yeah, this is another application we like plan to show in CVP. Okay, fine. But also, we are training a really good large model that can generalize. So we are on like 2 million text image pairs. These are like sourced from Leon and all the other open source that are license free, which are not licensed, not copyrighted for legal purposes.
I don't know. The Supreme Court says it might be okay.
Oh. And the current run does this. I'm sorry, this is a lot of dense, but I just got this results in the morning, so I just added it. So this is me just trying to reconstruct. So it's not there yet in terms of reconstruction, where I just provide, so none of these images are in the training data. Specifically, none of these concepts are in the training data. So we just, the data set has all the concepts that it has. So we randomly prompted a flux model to generate the concepts that are not present in the training and try to push it through this feed forward network. And I think it does a pretty good job at like trying to bring the concept of whatever you've given it. So yeah, like if a bird flying in a jungle, the regular diffusion flux model gives these outputs, but if you just pass your feed forward customization tokens, you get the same bird or similar bird in the similar pose and the background that comes out of it. So
this is a checkpoint of your current model?
It's checkpoint of my current model.
Oh, the general one.
The general one. And it's trained for like a day. So I don't think it's enough. The dog one trained for 15 days.
Wow.
So I think this might take time. Hopefully, I did get like some additional compute from Adobe. So this might like, I could reduce it down to like 3 to 4 days. Maybe I might hit CPR, I might not. But yeah, Nobel Prize for sure.
Try the pitching.
I will try the pitching. So yeah, this is the progress. It's an ambitious project. Hopefully we could get to a generalized model so that now you can actually make the artist happy, right? Like they don't really have to go find the dog specific feed forward network, bring it in for every dog related tasks. Hopefully we have a network that does all that Flux can do, but actually talk to it, right? That's the air quotes I had. The language of a diffusion model is basically you showing a diffusion model an image and telling you exactly what you want, and the model can actually do it for you in a feed-forward way. So that's the language part that I've been talking about, trying to communicate with it and try to get maybe a slightly better usage out of it by making... Do I have it? Oh, no, I don't have it. So we did try to visualize the feed-forward attention patterns. They are pretty interpretable, right? Like, so if you look at the dog token, what it's actually attending to, it does attend to the dog in the image, right? It's or like the most causal part. If you close that attention gateway, then it gives like some random dog. So yeah, it makes the user happy, hopefully. I think it does. It opens up like the same interp techniques that were used on Flux can be used on the feedforward network to actually understand what it's doing. And yeah, it's pretty causal. So hopefully the SAE, the MLP out neurons would actually give out, would also give out, you know, like some causally principled concepts for us to play around with. And who is the third group? Engineers are always happy, right? Like we don't have to make them happy. They'll come up with better models. We just have to train similar meta networks on top of it to communicate with them.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you. Yes.
How big is your MLP in the general case, and are you using the sparsity? And if so, why?
Yeah. So in the general case, the MLP can just be one layer, right? It can just be one single linear layer that takes in 3072 dimensions and expands it to 52 times whatever 3072 is. Right?
Yeah.
But only for the experiments that I showed, I use a two-layer MLP and expand it to like 10K dimensions.
That was for the dog network, right?
That was for the dog network, yes.
So this general...
This one is not being trained on MLP yet. This is just trained on that one single linear layer just so that we get like the results that... If it actually works or not. The L1 sparsity has been pretty challenging for us to work with, especially because we need to find like the right weightage of the L1, the right strategy to do it. So we didn't want to risk it for CVPI. But that is eventually the goal, is to have like a...
I mean, you can always train a sparse MLP on top of your linear layer.
Yeah, right? You could post-train.
Yeah, I could post-train.
Yeah, you could do a transcoder after the fact or something.
Wait, I don't understand. Isn't transcoder the one that takes inputs from one layer and transfer it to another layer?
Yeah, that layer is an MLP layer.
Huh?
That layer, you're substituting MLP with what is basically a sparse MLP.
Yeah, no, like I don't see this as a transcoder.
I know.
That's the definition of a transcoder. The block that you are skipping is a MLP. And the thing that you are skipping it with is a MLP.
I think the idea is not to train another layer on top of your MLP, but replace your MLP with a sparse MLP.
Yes, but you're directly training a sparse MLP to begin with.
You're just training a linear layer for the big model that's training right now.
Yeah.
You're just training a linear layer or an MLP?
Yeah, I'm just training a linear layer.
Just training a big one.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think I was being clear with the transfer.
Makes sense. Because I was just like imagining, because you're the general model, the non-dog model will have like so many I don't know how many concepts, but like probably a lot of concepts. Doing like the sparsity thing there might be sacrificing performance or something.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't want to risk that.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it seems like a nice to have.
Nice to have.
There. Rather than an actual working, not critical to the having a function.
Just do an easy post processing step. Yes.
Yeah. So that's the thing. Like,
Once you have
the linear layer, you can have all your input output pairs
and then
train a sparse transcoder on that.
Yes.
And then use that for interpretability rather than baking that into your training.
Yeah, that's what I. So some I can like speak about some other applications which we are planning, and I don't have the results yet because I've been working on the training part for a long time now. Is one thing that we worked in the past is sliders and slider space. And all of them needed training for each concept that you want to train on. Like for slider space, you have to give the word dog and it gives you all the dog slider space. It takes 2 hours to train that. That said, you can just sample all of the dogs from Leon, pass it through the feed forward network, get the vectors for the dog, just do a PCA on it, and you already have like feed forward sliders to work with because you don't need any other adapters on top of it. You just need those modulation vectors to just slide your. That's one thing. Another thing is trying to interpolate between two images. What if I take a delta for a dog and an elephant and try to interpolate between them? How would that concept look like? There's an evolutionary method where you can like Tinder, like swipe left, right, and like try to get to a better modulation vector. Yeah, like these are some of the things. If you've read the Google's video models are zero shot learners, you could also potentially try and see if you can do like segmentations. Like if there a vector for segmentation inside the flux model, it's not trained on it, but maybe there is. I think it's a good analogy that Chris took, which is this almost looks like a video model where you have to encode an image and decode an image out. So it opens up to like some other applications as well. So anything we can do better or more, I think I would like some inputs.
For your feed forward network, it seems like it was easy for you to just use Diflex backbone and to train that.
Yeah.
I think it makes sense because of the like cross passes of like text and images, but there's no actual reason to do it with that.
There's
like,
no reason.
You can do like a much deeper network or like I don't know.
Shallower,
yeah.
Yes, I do have some loss curves for them.
So it's
you started like, with the shallower network.
I did start with the shallower network, and I can we see that with the shallower network, the loss plateaus. But with like the deeper network, it starts going like even further down and like it starts learning more things.
I imagine that for your general one, you might need like a deeper one.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The dog ones are not 19 layers.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Dog ones are like 5 layers.
Okay.
Do you initialize it with a flux pre-trained?
I do.
Does that help? That helps.
That helps.
That's it.
Yeah.
You do LoRa or are you doing full fine tuning?
I'm doing full fine tuning. I could do LoRa too.
Cheaper for you?
Maybe. Yeah. It feels like it's a pretty hard task to do.
Because it's kind of different from what it was
it's trained on.
Trained to do.
Yeah. So maybe it might need some. So yeah, like some of the things I like about this work is that it never takes the image as an input when it's processing the actual generation part. Right, there's no compression network that takes the entire dog reference image. It's just working with these like 768 numbers all the time. And the fact that it can do it, I think it's pretty fascinating.
Yeah. If you wanted one that's like useful for artists, then maybe you could ask people or like different types of images that people make. So like, for example, people like doing portraiture or something, then you would want one that's just trained on faces and you maybe would get better features rather than just like having your SAE be like over like every possible kind of image, and it might be less controllable if you like care about certain types of images, I guess.
I see.
But yeah. I don't know.
That's for the engineers to be happy.
Yeah.
You can do that later on.
Yeah. Yeah, the one thing that it could be post-trained, the SAE, but I think the reason that we added in the training was to go outside the norm of correlation-based decomposition.
Mm.
Like, when it's trained on with the laws that we are training on, the sparse autoencoder is now trained in a principal causal way. The input it gets needs to have an output change in the flux model. So that, yeah, like to be honest, that's why I started this project, to come out with like a SAE alternative that's more causally principled. It just evolved into this thanks to Tokenverse for like dropping that idea, saying, hey, you can also think about this.
I guess like one maybe low-hanging fruits to try is to import like the idea of guidance into your training, and instead like optimize towards the guided noise.
Yeah, it does have guidance input. I never really thought about it. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, but I'm not even thinking of that. Like, so you could, so that you can sample the normal velocity that Flux was trained on, right? And you can sample your new velocity like towards the new dark.
Oh yeah, the one you like
push
right, yeah,
further to like from away from the old velocity to the new, and that could be the target.
Mm. I think that's a good idea. Like it's similar to the earlier experiment that we talked, the golden retriever dog sort of thing.
It's kind of similar, yes.
Yeah. Yes. Also, like I never really thought about this. There's a guidance input here to the flux block, which I did not draw. Yeah. And I always use like guidance zero when I'm encoding the image. It'll be interesting to see if I encode like guidance three now, if the modulation vector would get powerful.
Right. Maybe you're already done.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe you don't have to train it all the way.
Yeah.
You just turn guidance up.
You just turn the guidance up.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
Amazing.
Bye-bye.